Hello there, and welcome to KDL's Stump the Librarian podcast, where your friendly neighborhood librarians put their research skills to the test to answer questions from you, the listener, your hairstylist, or your veterinarian. I'm Jill, and I'm here with Liz. Hi, Liz.
Hi, Jill.
We love answering your questions, so please send them to us at kdl.org/stump. Or email us at stumpthelibrarian@kdl.org. We'd love to hear from you. We would love it if you followed the podcast on Apple Podcasts or Spotify or wherever you get your podcast. When you follow and like our podcast, more people can find us. All right, here's my top of the pod question for you today, Liz.
I'm ready.
If you could turn any vegetable into candy... Which one would you change? Now, it would still hold all of the properties of the vegetable, but it would taste like candy.
Okay, so you'd still get your vitamins.
Yes, and all yes, of that. It's very nutritious.
Okay, as a kid, I would have said peas, like individual peas, because I really don't like the texture of them. But now, as an adult, they're okay. But, like, now I would say raw broccoli. I have a really hard time with the texture and the flavor of it. I don't mind it cooked. But if that tasted like candy.
You would just eat it.
Hot diggity dog, right? Okay. Right. How about you?
Okay. I love vegetables. And so this was kind of hard for me. But I'm thinking some of the weirder greens, like kale. Yeah, it has just gets caught in your throat. It's not good.
Squeaky.
Yeah.
Squeaky.
Yeah, and Swiss chard kind of tastes like dirt a little bit. So, you know, yeah, those just turn those into candy, and then I'll just eat a salad of candy.
Candy salad.
Yeah, that sounds delicious.
That's perfect.
Yeah.
Well, how enlightening. Jill, do you have a question for us today?
I have two questions.
Two?
Yes, I'm sneaking in a second one here.
Oh, interesting.
It's, yeah, so here we go. One of them, why do we have eyebrows? From Tyler at our Kentwood branch. Sure. And how many strands of hair does an average human have? From Zoe at our Wyoming branch.
Oh, that's a combination question.
Yeah, yeah. So hair.
Hair.
What is it? Why do we have it? How much do we have? They're great questions. I thought I would just tackle them together. Hopefully Tyler and Zoe don't mind. It's our hairy episode.
Ew.
Hair is a really interesting thing. All mammals have hair, but it may present differently on different animals. Humans are one of the mammals with the least amount of hair. Other mammals that have a low amount of hair are elephants, whales, rhinoceroses. They just have like little bristles of hair. They don't have a lot of hair. Human hair is very diverse. There are many different textures and colors of hair, and hair serves many functions. In the animal kingdom, hair often provides camouflage or helps animals find a mate, you know, like a lion who's like, look at my hair, I'm so good looking.
But that's what they sound like.
That is what they sound like. So I thought those were interesting functions of hair, but I'm going to focus on human hair. We don't usually use our hair to hide ourselves, camouflage, but maybe a little bit. It is on almost all of our body, but we just have, you know, less hair than your cat, so we don't look furry. There are a few places we don't grow hair. Here's the quiz, Liz. Do you know any of those places? Even just one of those places we don't grow any hair.
Like your eyeball? Is well,
that is true. We don't have hair on our eyeball. The hairy eyeball. No.
The bottom of your feet?
Yes.
Okay.
That's one of them. So the places are the palms of our hands, the soles of our feet, and our lips.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and that's it. We have hair other places.
Interesting.
And our hair has functions, just like animal hair has functions. Hair protects us from UV radiation and from dust. Hair helps us regulate our temperature. And hair helps us detect touch. Hair follicles are surrounded with nerve endings, and it makes us more sensitive to touch, so we can tell when we're being touched. You know that whiskers are like specialized hair for cats. And so that's something that they can sense touch with too. So ours is like that too. Not quite as in depth as cat whiskers, but we do sense touch through our hair. Eyebrows and eyelashes are specialized hair, and they also have a function. I think that we'd probably look weird without those specialized features. But if none of us ever had them, we would just be used to that and we wouldn't think anything of it. But they have a function. So Tyler, here's your answer. Both of those things are there to protect your eyes. Eyebrows protect against sweat running into your eyes. And eyelashes protect against dirt and dust blowing into your eyes. And they also protect your eyes from the amount of light that gets into your eyes. So that's why those are things are there. They're protecting your eyeballs, which shouldn't have hair coming out of them. Hopefully.
Hopefully.
Hair on our head is the most dense hair on our body. Exactly how many hairs you have on your head varies by person because each person has a unique hair density. But generally speaking, we have 90,000 to 150,000 hairs on a human head. Wow. I know.
That sounds like a lot.
It's a lot of hair. So there you go, Zoe. That's how many hairs. But I'm going to talk more about that. I found this really fascinating database. It was linked through our database on the Arcadia website, the Britannica. They're on Britannica's website, on their database, there is links to the best of the web, and those are really useful links. So if you're ever researching anything, I recommend checking that out, checking out that best of the web from Encyclopedia Britannica, and then you can find more information. So I found some useful biological numbers database that was put out by Harvard University.
Nice.
And so it's a really, each article is just a tiny little article and it basically just has a number in it. And they also happen to have the number of hairs and eyebrows. So I looked that up and it's about 600.
Oh,
so quite a few less than the hairs on our head.
Hopefully.
I linked that database in the show notes so you can go on an endless journey to find all of the biological numbers in human bodies. Wow. Have fun with that. How in the world do we know how many hairs a human has? I could not sit there and count all of those.
Whose job is it to count them?
Well, there was a scientific study.
Okay.
That
was a scientist's job.
It was a scientist's job, counting hairs. They didn't count a whole head, though. They counted a sample size. They used three different sample sizes, 1, 2, and 3 square centimeters of hair, which is a pretty small amount of your head. And then they would compare all of the heads of hair they counted and compare hair density. And they made estimates based on the density of that 1 square centimeter about how many hairs would be on the entire head of hair. So Zoe, it's a pretty broad answer, that number, because people have different hair density. So that's why. The same study that found that density number also found that hair color relates to hair density. I never would have thought about that. But the study found that people with blonde hair have the most dense hair, or they have the highest number of hairs on their head.
Huh.
I never would have thought that.
No.
And then brown, and then black, and then red has the least number of hairs.
Interesting.
I know. We have covered hair on this podcast before. I remember I was the one who did the research. It was way back before Liz was on the podcast in episode 13.
Before Liz.
Yes. We answered the question, how does hair grow? So I'm not going to talk about that again today, although I could because it does tie in. But go back, listen to that episode and find out about how hair grows. And I think I also talked about what makes hair curly and straight. We're not going to talk about that. Go back and check it out. We will still close out with some quick hair facts, of course, though. On average, hair grows at a rate of 6 inches per year. And it is men grow hair faster than women, which does seem fair. We are continually shedding and regrowing hair. Humans lose 50 to 100 hairs a day. So don't worry if you're losing hair because you're constantly growing and losing hair. Your hair color is determined by genetics. And the most common hair colors are black and brown. About 90% of the people on Earth have black or brown hair.
Wow.
Yeah. And one more interesting fact about hair. Last fact. Hair is stronger than you might think. One single strand of human hair can hold about a quarter of a pound. So a quarter pounder from McDonald's, wrap that thing up in your hair.
No, thank you. Fascinating.
Wow. So that's that, my hair facts for today.
Awesome. Thanks. That's a lot about hair.
I know. I said this is a hairy, hairy episode.
All right. Are you done? Is that it?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Please.
The end.
Give us your fact of the day.
Sorry, I didn't know if there were more hairy facts coming.
I mean, I do have more hairy facts, but I'm just gonna sit on those.
Awesome. Okay, my fact of the day comes from The Good Luck Book, a celebration of global traditions, superstitions, and folklore by Heather Alexander. And it's in our curious section of nonfiction here at Kent District Library. So I pulled this off the shelf. This good luck book fact, I guess it's a fact, it's folklore, so it's stories passed down through generations, is about knocking on wood. Do you knock on wood, Jill?
I mean, maybe occasionally.
Okay. So how did that start? So I'm going to read this from this good luck book. Knocking on or touching wood is like a protection charm against something bad happening. So sometimes we'll say, oh, I'm so glad I didn't get sick, knock on wood, right? Many people believe that if things are going well or if they voice their hopes or boast about something, they will be jinxed and everything will be ruined. So knocking on wood is thought to reverse that. A popular theory is that the superstition began with the ancient pagan religions that believed helpful tree spirits lived inside of trees. Isn't that a nice, like, story?
Yeah, that's great.
By touching a tree, you were letting the spirits know that you knew they were there. So in return, the spirits would make sure everything went okay for you. So knocking on a tree trunk soon became knocking on wood and furniture. Now people often just say knock on wood or touch wood, and the tree spirits get the idea.
Thank you, tree spirits.
And then there's a couple little quick side notes here. In Brazil and Portugal, you must knock three times. So how many times do you usually knock? I usually
twice.
Just do twice. Yeah. In Italy, you get luck by touching iron because iron lasts longer than wood.
Oh.
So maybe they say touch iron instead of knock on wood. But if you're interested in that kind of superstitions and folklore, I would recommend checking out The Good Luck Book by Heather Alexander.
That sounds exciting.
There's all sorts of interesting stories and things that maybe are part of the way we talk normally.
Idioms,
or things that...
Legends.
Things like opening an umbrella inside, things like that you don't really...
Superstitions.
Like, where did that come from? So you'll find more information in that book.
Sometimes we get questions like that.
We do.
On the podcast. So here's your book.
This
book
would
is
be
for you.
A great book as a resource. Yeah, really interesting. All right. Are you ready for another question?
Yeah, I feel like this is going along with our theme of hairy questions.
Yes, it is. But this one's not about hair, but it's about a hairy animal. So,
The hairiest.
Is it the hairiest?
I don't know.
I'm not
it's
sure.
It's pretty hairy.
This question comes from Sophia, age 9, from Lowell. And Sophia asks, why do cats purr? What a great question. I don't have any cats at my house right now, but you do, right, Jill?
I do. I have a cat named Zelda, and she is a lot of shedding. She's very hairy.
Okay, hairy. Yeah. Yep. Mm-hmm. Does she purr frequently? Some cats do purr more than others.
She does not purr as much as cats I've had in the past. Okay. She is vocal, though. She does a lot of meowing.
Chirping.
Yeah, okay. She does chirping.
Cool. Mm-hmm. Well, cats purr their whole lives. It starts when they're tiny kittens and they're nursing from their mama cat. It's a way that the mother and kitten can reassure one another that everything is okay. As they get older, cats purr when they are relaxed, content, and some even purr while they're eating because they're happy. Mm-hmm. It's a sign that everything is all right in their world. Some cats might even purr to demonstrate to another cat that they're not a threat, that they're a friendly cat. Mm-hmm. Domestic cats, the ones that you have for a pet, have different kinds of purrs, which you just kind of touched on. Mm-hmm. If they're looking for food or if they want your attention, the purr might sound higher pitched. and it's called a solicitation purr.
Oh.
That means they want something from you, and it usually sounds different than when you're just scratching under their chin.
Mm-hmm.
So some studies have shown that cats even can mimic a baby cry in order to get their humans' attention.
Oh, interesting.
The regular, contented, scratching behind the ears purr is called a non-solicitation purr, which it usually the cat owner can differentiate, can tell the difference between the two. Some cats even purr when they are injured, sick, or stressed. Mm-hmm. The rumbling, vibrating, purring noise has been linked to healing and inflammation reduction.
Oh, interesting.
It's even been demonstrated to promote bone growth in cats. Bones harden in response to the frequency of their purrs, so a cat that is hurt or injured might purr because it's a way for their body to repair itself.
Wow.
It's also been identified as a way for a cat to deal with a stressful situation. So some cats will purr when they're scared or when they're exploring a new space, maybe to comfort themselves.
Mm-hmm.
So how exactly do cats make that purring noise? It happens in the cat's voice box or larynx. We have a larynx too, or voice box. If you put your hand on the front of your neck and start talking, you can feel the vibrations of your own voice. But when cats purr, they're breathing in and out like normal, but they open and close or dilate and constrict the area around their vocal cords, which is called the glottis. So they can control the opening and closing as they breathe.
Hmm.
A purr sound is very low frequency, 20 to 150 hertz. Typically, such a low frequency sound requires a much longer vocal cord, like an elephant's, because it's such a low frequency.
Uh-huh.
Big cats, like lions and tigers, cannot purr.
Oh.
If a cat, big or small, can roar, it cannot purr.
Interesting.
Did you know that?
I did not know that. So
I learned that answering this question.
That's really so. There's other big cats that can purr.
One big cat can purr, but it does because it doesn't roar.
Right.
Do you know which one it is?
Is it a mountain lion?
Mm, it's the cheetah.
Oh, the cheetah. Okay.
Purring and roaring have to do with a U-shaped bone that is located in the back of the throat and supports the tongue and larynx, called a hyoid bone.
Oh.
Hyoid.
Okay.
That's an interesting word to try to say.
Yeah, that's a very interesting word.
So cats that purr have a hard, or it's called ossified, hyoid bone, and the purring resonates through the bone.
Okay.
Big cats like lions, leopards, tigers, and jaguars have a tough but flexible hyoid bone. So if you feel the top of your ear, that's cartilage. That's what their hyoid bone is like.
Okay.
That means they can't make that low frequency purring sound, but they can roar super loudly.
Yep.
So those four big cats also have an extra thick pad of tissue on their vocal folds, so inside, which produces a low pitch roar. A lion's roar can be heard up to 5 miles away.
Oh,
did you know that?
I did not know that.
So your cat, Jill, does not have those extra pads on their vocal folds.
She doesn't roar.
So she cannot roar, but she can purr.
She can.
Whether or not cats can control their purring is up for debate. I read some stories on both sides, but some scientists believe that purring is similar to a human talking. Something we can completely control once we learn how to do it. But others believe that cats don't have control. It's like when humans snore. It's just a noise that we make, even though we're not really aware that we're making it.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think? Do you think your cat can control their purr?
It seems like it. Especially because it's so different when, like you said, when she wants something. Mm-hmm. It's a very different purr. And she is one of the sassiest cats I've ever had. And she usually accompanies her I'm hungry noises with a nip.
Oh.
She will bite my ankle. Oh, just my. Me. She's like, you will feed me.
Right.
Nobody else.
Right. Wow. That's kind of bossy.
She's very bossy. She is the sassiest little cat I've ever had.
Oh, my goodness. Well, another theory that I found out there is it might even be like raising our eyebrows. We were talking about eyebrows.
Yeah.
We can do it on purpose, but sometimes it just happens as a reaction to something we see or hear.
So maybe both.
It could be both.
Yeah.
It could be all of those things. Like, scientists aren't really sure.
Sure. Yeah.
But it's interesting to think about. Mm-hmm. So I hope that answers your perfect question, Sophia. I learned a lot and maybe watched a few cat videos in the process. Aww. For research. I had to learn more about purring, but it was a great question, and thank you for submitting it, Sophia.
That is a great question. I just love cats.
I know how much you love big cats.
I do.
You should have done this question. Big cats.
Yeah. Well, I was just too excited about the hair question,
yeah,
but
yeah.
You know,
lots of hair and lots of cat hair today.
Just lots of cat hair. Cat hair gets everywhere. The hairiest animal is the sea otter.
Really? Well, that makes sense because they're in the water all the time.
And
that fur protects them.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. And they have pockets too. Remember that?
Yes. I love their pockets. I do remember that.
Oh, what did we learn today, Jill? That was a great episode.
That was a good episode. But I have a book to share.
Oh gosh. How could I forget?
It's okay. You know, it doesn't even seem as exciting as everything we talked about, but
it is
a good book. So I do want to share it.
Of course, of course.
And it is one of the, I'm still reading those award winners because I really just get into doing that. So it is called Eagle Drums by Nesterov Rainey Hobson. And it is a magical realism book that includes the New Peak folklore and the origin story of how the Nupiaq people were given music, drums, community, and tradition. So it's the story of one boy, Pina, a skilled hunter who lives alone with his mother and father. He lives alone with his parents because his two older brothers were also hunters, but they disappeared on the mountain during their hunts. So he has to go to the mountain now to hunt before the winter comes. His parents don't want to send him because... Yeah. You know, they
people
lost
disappear
his other
out there.
Yeah. Yeah. But they know he has to go. And his father's not a hunter. His father is a fisher. So they have different roles. And so he has to be the one to go and do this. On his hunt, he is confronted by an eagle man. So it looks like an eagle. And then it lands. And then it's a man. This is folklore, remember?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And he is taken up the mountain to the home of the eagles. They promise him that if he follows everything that they tell him to do, he will be allowed to return home. So here's what they ask him to do. He must learn to make drums, and he must learn to play the drums. He must learn to sing songs that tell stories that they teach him, and he must learn to write story songs of his own. So every day he works with the eagle man and the eagle grandmother to learn more. And it was really, it was really an interesting story. It was different stylistically than many other stories that I read. It was very short. It's a legend, which I thought was really interesting. I personally enjoyed learning about the legend and the folklore of the Nupiaq people through Pina's story. That's a Native American tribe in North America. And as I was reading, I just had to keep reading because I needed to know if Pina would ever complete the task set before him by the eagle people. And I wasn't actually sure what the outcome would be because, as you read folklores and legends, there is not always a happily ever after. It is not guaranteed.
Not always.
So I was really compelled to continue reading every day when Pina woke up. What's going to happen to him today? Is he going to continue to learn more? Is he going to be killed today? What is going to happen to him? And you will have to read this book for yourself and read each page with anticipation of what is going to happen to him.
Wow, that sounds like a good one.
It was very good. The artwork was very beautiful. It's not on every page. It's just at the start of the chapter.
Okay.
There's like a picture. It really brings you into a culture that isn't familiar to me. And I enjoyed that. And I like reading legends. I think, you know, they're often a little dark, so it's a little different than what I typically read, which is usually, I know it's going to be a happy ending.
Right. Everything will work out.
Everything's going to work out. Yep. So it was
awesome.
Yeah. Very interesting book. So now what did we learn today?
No, I just couldn't wait.
I know you were so excited because we did learn so many things today. And I will totally go first. I'm so excited about what I learned today. Okay. I loved everything I learned about cats praying. And I did learn a lot today. There were so many things I didn't know. But definitely my favorite thing I learned is that big cats who roar can't purr and vice versa because of the same structure being built differently. That's really cool.
It's really cool.
And you know, I'm really into all cats, big and small. So that was a super exciting fact for me. And I guess I'll stop telling Zelda that if she just tries hard enough, she can roar someday.
She can't. She physically cannot.
She cannot.
No. Okay. Well, I learned a lot about hair today, Jill. And I wrote something down and now I feel like maybe I didn't write it down right, but you can correct me if I'm wrong. But light colored hair is more dense than dark colored hair.
It seems wrong,
doesn't
it? That
seems opposite because I wrote it down. And then as you were telling us about your book, I looked at it and I said, I don't know if that's right.
Yeah, it is right. And it does. It seems really counterintuitive to me as well. Like, why would blonde hair be the most dense?
Yeah.
But it is.
It is.
Yeah.
And red hair is the least.
How about that? Brown and black are in the middle.
Interesting.
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
I didn't either. And I had to fact check it several places. I was like, listen, I know that this Harvard database seems really smart, but this cannot be right. I have got to go check this. So I checked it several places because I was skeptical.
Right. But that's what we do when we learn about the world around us. We check lots of different places.
It's really important to fact check more than one place, especially if you're like, this seems counterintuitive than my life.
Yeah, sure. Awesome. Yeah. All right. Well, I guess that's it for us today. Is that right?
So. Like that's now I really feel it. That's really it now.
I feel like I'm missing something. Thanks for all of your amazing questions and for helping us to learn more about our world too. For more information or to send us your own question, head to kdl.org/stump. Tune into the next episode where we answer even more of your questions. Huge and special thanks to the KDL Programming Department, the KDL Marketing Department, and JD Dolinsky for our intro and outro music. Thank you.